continues. My, oh my!
Shannon!
Don't want to foul.
Shannon from the corner!
Russell takes the snap, drops back. He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. The ball is caught.
Game over,
it
baby.
It is a touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl in Glendale. What a catch in the end zone. It is cursed.
And welcome back to the locker room. We actually have some breaking news today. We're going to get to in just a second because it's not going to be that breaking by the time this airs. But zero preseason games for the NFL this year. We'll talk more about that in a second as well. But I'm your host, Justin Reed, alongside Andrew Tenney. We are the locker room, the only consistently running sports talk podcast video show in the Spokane market. So that's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool, yeah. It's, for it's whatever something. That's worth, yeah.
Yeah, for whatever it's worth.
A little feather in our cap.
Exactly. So, first off, this also happened today. Michael Bennett retired after, 10 years, I think?
11 seasons, I think.
11 yeah. seasons. He was a three-time Pro Bowler. He was actually an undrafted free agent mm-hmm. by the Seahawks. Was signed by the Buccaneers, played there for 4 years, came back home, and had a pretty decent career overall. Won a Super Bowl with the Seahawks. Then after his career with the Seahawks, then he actually went over to both the Patriots, the Eagles, and I think he played
Cowboys.
For Dallas toward the end mm-hmm. of last season. So just to kind of look at his career, he, like I said, 11 seasons, won a Super Bowl ring, and he had 69.5 sacks.
Kind of nice.
Kind of nice, yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
kind of nice.
Kind of nice. It's like a little more than half of kind of nice, but it's
he actually probably had a better and more accomplished career than his brother Martellus, mm-hmm. who was between the two of them, you know, all that coming yeah. out of college and yep. was actually drafted and was the prospect. But yeah, Michael kind of usurped him, or at least yep. did his best to while he was in the league. He really was good at reading the snap counts appropriately. My God, I will never
most of the time.
If I had a nickel for every time that Michael Bennett jumped off sides,
we wouldn't have to be doing this.
No, we wouldn't. No, not at all. So thank you, Michael Bennett. I mean, I did appreciate your play, and you were about the only person in Super Bowl 49 that could put any heat on Brady from the interior, which was pretty impressive. But goddamn it, man, you did not stay on side to save your life.
He didn't, and I will give a quick shout-out. So he went to Texas A&M. He was an Aggie, so the original 12th man. But one of my best friend's husbands, who just got married here a couple weeks ago, went to Texas A&M. So I've actually never talked to him about Michael Bennett, but I will be seeing him tomorrow, and you bet I'll be talking some Michael Bennett with him. So that should be kind of fun.
I'm sure he's going to be stoked. He's going to be like, stoked. Yeah, this is exactly what I want to talk about. Yeah, please.
Just Michael Bennett's my favorite topic of conversation ever.
Is it not everybody else's?
Exactly, right? Just, you know, kind of nice. We're going to move on to also some more football. Football is currently making its way back. Rookies reported today for a couple teams, and I think the rest report over the next couple days. But we're going to talk some possible MVP candidates. Bill Barnwell, who's kind of ESPN's go-to analytics guy for the NFL specifically, brought up some possible MVP candidates, kind of said Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of other people. So we broke it up into tiers. One of the interesting things is he has, in group one, he has the Hall of Fame QBs. That's a good tier to start in. The only problem I have with it is it has five guys who are definitely going to be Hall of Famers. Brady, Breeze, Mahomes, Rodgers, Roethlisberger. That's all fine. It's missing one big guy in there who's all the way down in tier three, and that's Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is in the tier established, effective starting quarterbacks is his tier. And this is a guy who, granted, has never received an MVP vote for God knows why, but he is in the same tier as Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jared Goff, Newton, Prescott, Rivers, Ryan, Stafford, Tannehill, Tyrod Taylor, Wentz. He's in the same tier as those guys, mm-hmm. Russell Wilson. And so this is why I kind of am upset about this. And again, you know, it's going to go back. He's a homer or whatever. I know our producer's a big Saints guy, and he's like, Russell Wilson isn't even the top five quarterback. And that's exactly how he sounds. But that's incorrect. Russell Wilson deserves to be in that tier because he is a Hall of Fame quarterback through and through. But aside from that, what do you have to say on that?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the tier two candidates. And so you have Josh Allen, yeah. Joe Burrow, Sam Darnold, Dwayne Haskins, Lamar Jackson, Fair, Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, Baker Mayfield, Gardner Minshew, shout out, Kyler Murray, Mitch Trubisky, and Deshaun Watson. Watson, Jackson, are the only two that are plausible. Okay, yep. Kyler Murray, there's a lot of talk about him being a dark horse.
There's a high ceiling there.
Yeah,
for sure.
There is. If everything breaks right, possibly, but it's one of those things, it's like I can't even get mad about it just because it's so ludicrous that I don't exactly take it seriously, and I take it with a rock of salt rather than a grain. But I'm glad that you're upset about it, and visibly so.
And see, then he also said his favorite from this group, so from group three, his favorite from this group was Dak Prescott. And don't get me wrong, when we've talked about Dak in the past too, you know, him and Wentz, that comparison, the problem with Dak Prescott is he's never won anything. He's never done anything in the NFL aside from winning regular season games, and he hasn't even been fantastic at doing that.
Well, he did beat the Seahawks.
He did beat the Seahawks, but we're just going to look past that.
Right, okay.
For the sake of this argument. But you know, if we go back to the tier one, I don't think there's any arguments there. I think Mahomes has the fast track to win it. If his knee didn't get shredded along with his ankle throughout of last season, I think he still probably would have beat Lamar Jackson because of the fact that Mahomes is just puts up world ungodly, crazy world numbers, and Lamar Jackson does it with his feet mainly. So I think that's fine. I think one thing we're gonna have this year is gonna be so weird because there's going to be so many weird games. Like we talked before the show that with no preseason games, because that happened literally 5 minutes before we were starting to record this, with the lack of preseason games, is a guy like, for instance, Kyler Murray or a guy who's going to have a bunch of new weapons going to be really successful? And I think that's a solid argument. Or a guy with a new offensive line, or a guy like Tom Brady who's on a completely new team. Is that really going to play out very well? You know, Russell Wilson has a decently new offensive line, but he's proven that the offensive line doesn't matter, whoever plays in front of him. So that's why it's kind of odd to me that they're picking a guy. I don't think Tom Brady deserves to be in this category. I would be absolutely shocked if Brady wins MVP. I'd be shocked if Brees wins MVP. I'd be shocked if Roethlisberger earns MVP.
Well, hey, at least Brady's forcing these ill-advised workouts with his teammates and everything. But, yeah, to kind of piggyback off your point, all offseason, the talk and the chatter has been about how the pandemic and how the lack of an offseason is going to affect the teams, especially as we get into September and as the season starts. You got to think the well-established, good, smart organizations, Baltimore's, the Kansas City's, San Francisco, and the ones that are largely intact from the year prior are majorly going to benefit from that. Some of the teams that have had major personnel overhauls or coaching staff changes, you would think are going to have a lot more difficult of a time. But with also no preseason games being played, football's going to be really sloppy coming out of the gate. I mean, I remember last year it was egregious. It was awful to watch, mostly just because the refs called holding on everything. Yep. And then Brady watched the Thursday night game and tweeted, hey, this sucks to watch. And then NFL's like, shoot, huh, let's do something about that. Let's figure that out. But it's going to be an interesting watch. I'm nervous. What do you think it's going to manifest?
It's going to be a little ugly, like you said. I think luckily there's not too many rule changes that are being implemented this year. The holding one, they really wanted to focus. And so that's one thing that the NFL hasn't talked about is the penalties that they're really going to try and focus on. The ones that, like the holding and the pass interference, that's gone. You can't, there's no reviewing pass interference plays. I think that's better for the game. So I think it's going to be sloppy for the first few weeks. The teams with veteran play callers, with veteran QBs, with a strong coaching staff that doesn't have much to change are going to do well. And Seattle fits into that ballpark as well because their offensive defensive scheme are going to stay the exact same. The one thing that's going to be big for the Seahawks is the offensive line and defensive line gelling together because the secondary isn't going to change much. The linebackers aren't going to change much. And on the offensive side of the ball, running backs are going to be a little unhealthy. Wide receivers are going to be the same. Obviously, Russell Wilson's there. So I think that's going to be the key for these teams is how many players are coming back because the teams that are expected to do very well or decently well, like the Bucs, they have a lot of problems in the sense that they're completely overhauling that team specifically around Brady and specifically around that style of play because they're not playing the same offense that they played with Jameis at the helm last year because Brady doesn't have that caliber of arm. I think Jameis Winston has a better arm than Brady, not better talent, better arm. And so a thing like that is now how well are they going to be able to practice something like that when for probably the first month they're not even going to be in pads.
I mean, essentially the preseason is going to play itself out during the regular season games and probably the first 3 or 4 weeks at least. That would be my best guess. But yeah, you're right. I would like to think that Brady and the way he approaches the game, and Bruce Arians, who's a really smart coach, been around a long time, been around a lot of great quarterbacks, that they've been working together the entire offseason. Actually, I know that for a fact. Yeah. However, whether that ends up translating to execution on the field is yet to be seen. But it's gonna be weird. It's gonna be a weird season. Very weird.
And it's also gonna be weird for fantasy football. The premier fantasy game in sports is fantasy football. It's better than baseball, basketball, hockey, I mean, soccer. It is just the best fantasy game out there. And whereas we're going to move into that, I'm personally drafting, I think, this weekend.
Which is
and
insane
very early,
to me.
Very yeah. early. Luckily, with that news of no preseason games, it actually is working out perfectly because now you only have to worry about injuries in practice, which happen no matter what. So. Yeah. Probably drafting this weekend. ESPN has been on top of this for weeks. They plan for this time of the year. I mean, they have guys who only do fantasy, and that's all that they do. And so they've been working on this for weeks. They've released their top 100 PPR, their top 300 PPR, and now we're getting into the groove of with no preseason games. I think there's going to be a lot of leagues that are going to want to start drafting early because they've had no sports, and now they don't have to worry about injuries. And so let's look into this a little bit in terms of the top picks. Let's start off with you. Let's say you get the number one overall pick. You're in a 10-team league. I'm in an 8-man league. You get the number one overall pick. Who are you taking?
Well, this is pretty easy for me because I'm going to do the same thing that I did last year, which carried me to the championship game for the second consecutive year in which I lost both of those. But that's neither here nor there. I had the number one pick last year, and it was between Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley. Having the ties to Stanford and growing up being a Stanford fan, it was run CMC all the way, and that ended up being a very sound choice.
Yes, that was pretty profitable.
So I would go back to the same again. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to produce at the same level that he was last year, just because the numbers that he put up last year were so insane. It would be equally impressive or more impressive to replicate those numbers this season. And defenses and defensive coaches, you know, they figure it out a little bit more season after season when someone's kicking
it's
their
the
teeth
NFL
in.
For you. Yep.
Yeah. So, and we'll see without Cam being there if, you know, Teddy doesn't exactly have the mobility and that dual threat potential that Cam did. So I don't
or
know
even
if that's,
that Kyle Allen had even.
Yeah. That's true. So I don't know if that's going to take anything away from Christian and his ability and, you know, the fact that defenses aren't going to have to worry that much about, Teddy keeping the ball on read options or things like that. So, but either way, for me, it would be Christian.
So I was in the same boat as you last year. I had the number one overall pick, and I went the other route. So I picked Saquon.
Rough.
I ended up making the championship game too and losing, but you're right. It was rough because for of the 16 regular season games, I think he played in five, and maybe six, but he was like purely healthy for maybe two of those. Livy was lucky. And so, yeah, I'm shuffling consistently this entire time. But I picked Saquon this year. It's tough. A healthy Saquon, I think, is probably going to be a little bit better just in pure terms. But McCaffrey has shown that he can stay healthy, especially for a smaller guy. I'd probably pick McCaffrey this time too. I actually had the mistake. I made the large mistake last year. I don't know how this happened. But I picked Saquon first, and I picked Antonio Brown in the second round.
Nice.
So that was a sick start to my year. When everything
well, he had a good, what was that, week two, week three down in Miami?
Yeah. I actually didn't even play him because they weren't even sure if he was going to play. So he was on my bench, so that was sweet. But, you know, looking through this, a lot of – times, you know, you want a running back first, but that's kind of changing, especially in PPR leagues. PPR leagues are causing a lot of fantasy teams to maybe even weigh picking a guy like Michael Thomas number one overall.
That's who I was going to bring up.
That's probably my number one wide receiver this year. You know, DeAndre Hopkins is probably up in that range as well, just because I think he's going to be that vocal point of the Cardinals offense. Julio Jones at wide receiver three is I'm not sure if I like him there anymore.
He doesn't find the end zone a lot, but he still puts up the numbers. He obviously gets the targets and the receptions.
He's top five, don't get me wrong, but I'm not sure. I'd probably lean toward taking a guy like Tariq Hill, even though he has injury problems, or even Davante Adams above him, because, again, Davante Adams has to be the vocal point. It's just close. That because I think everyone agrees Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins is probably 1-2.
Or 1A, 1B.
Exactly, yeah really. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go past that, and then you're looking at even the second round of running backs. You look at Zeke and Dalvin Cook were on this is Eric Carabel, by the way, on ESPN. But Then you get below that, and then like Austin Eckler is at 11 overall, which I know he is the only Chargers running back. I think they maybe brought someone else in, but I don't think he's anything special. That's the thing for me when I'm looking at building a team. It's not so much about position as much as it is you just need to fill starting spots, especially in PPR. You can pick Michael Thomas. Heck, you know, you could probably even argue picking Michael Thomas number one overall in PPR. Would I do that? No. Would I pick him at 5 or 3? Probably. If I had the number 3 overall pick and I had to pick between Zeke, Dalvin Cook, and Michael Thomas, I'm probably taking Michael Thomas.
I don't think I would push back on that. Yeah, no, I think I would go the same route.
I think you could easily argue that. But, you know, as you get further down the list, and I mean, even Chris Godwin at 16, and I know it's a different offense, but it's the slot guy, and the slot guy in Brady offenses are always studs consistently.
And he's not exactly the textbook slot receiver from a physical standpoint either.
No,
so.
but he can run every route on the route tree. But having him that low, I think that's a steal. I also have to be careful. So hopefully my friends don't like this show very much. Hopefully they're not watching because I'm probably diving in this a little more than I would like to. But moving further down the list, I mean, even Mike Evans is behind Chris Godwin in Tampa Bay for Eric Carabell. He has him at 19. Going below that, his first quarterback off the board is Mahomes and then Jackson. I think that also makes sense. So I'm in a 2 QB league, so it's a little bit different. A lot of times when we play 10-team one quarterback leagues, I'm not taking a quarterback until like round 7 probably. I'm picking a second tier QB because the point differential usually between, you know, outside of the top 2 in this case, between 3 and 10 is usually pretty darn close.
You could take Garoppolo and be
just fine.
Yep.
But in a 2 QB league, there's going to be someone who I took Mahomes in the 3rd round last year, and I'm surprised he was even there. There's going to be somebody who takes Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, and probably in my league, probably in the 1st round. And like that's the weird part with 2-man leagues is that it gets just a little funky with the way that it drafts. You're pretty standard. Your league's pretty standard. 10.
Yeah, I did play
standard.
A 2 QB league last year as well. Mm-hmm. For the first time. I wasn't a huge fan. I did like the mm-hmm. 2 flex in another league that we played. Mm-hmm. But yeah, typically I go pretty standard. Last year was actually the first year that I played PPR, and that mm-hmm. was awesome.
Yeah.
Having chosen Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, really, yeah. It worked out really well.
But yeah, I keep things pretty standard for the most part. Don't do anything crazy or wild with, mm-hmm. you know, 40-yard runs or 40-yard catches and extra 5 points or whatever
that
you can add.
Too much. Yeah, we had been pretty standard overall. The one thing that we had to switch is because of the 8-man league. But PPR is now considered standard in terms of scoring. Looking just to kind of keep it more local, the first Seahawk off the board for Eric Carabell would be Chris Carson at 37, right behind Le'Veon Bell, which is a little bit of a surprise, and then Juju Smith-Schuster at 38, which is also – that's a steal. If Ben Roethlisberger's mm-hmm. healthy, I think having Juju Smith-Schuster at 38 is an absolute steal. You know, I think you can move him up into the top 25. I think he has the talent. He has the health. If Ben Roethlisberger stays healthy, Juju Smith-Schuster, I think, is a top borderline top 10 wide receiver for me.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen it without Antonio Brown there. That's the only hesitation that I would have there. Outside of that, I would agree with your logic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he's behind Allen Robinson in Chicago, and he has...
Allen Robinson would be awesome if he had a quarterback to throw.
For sure.
The fact that he's been stuck with Mitchell Trubisky and Blake Bortles for
awful.
His entire career is just brutal because the guy is awesome.
Talented. He's very talented. He has the size, the speed, everything you're looking for in a number one wide receiver. Going below that, we have Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, actually 46 and 47. I think that's decently low for me as well. That's actually probably pretty close. That puts them on the back end or right in the middle of wide receiver 2 status. That's actually probably right. Russell Wilson is the 5th quarterback off the board here, behind the big 2. Mm-hmm. Then you bring in Dak, Kyler, Deshaun Wilson, so he's actually the 6th. I think that's probably fair. Wilson, since he's been lessening his running so much, he hasn't been that perennial top 5 automatic week by week. He usually finishes top 5, but he's a guy who's going to put up 40 plus points a game and might only put up, you know, 13 to 15 the next week because he's going to throw for 185 with 2 touchdowns. And so I think that's probably fair. But essentially, as I think as we get closer to the NFL season, I think we're going to try and focus a lot more on fantasy football as things kind of get locked in. So keep your eyes out on that. Once we also get more live sports, which we'll also get to in a second because that's happening this week, we will continue to take live phone calls. Well, I think I want to discuss with some people some fantasy stuff because you can literally talk for hours on how deep fantasy football
is. And I'm really curious to see. I mean, I assume it's going to be a volatile year fantasy-wise just because people are going to test positive. And you're not going to really be able to predict it. You're just going to get the notification on your phone that it's like, hey, your top player just tested positive, isn't playing this week.
Yep.
So there's going to be a lot of scrambling. Waiver wires are going to be
busy. You got to stay on top of it. You got to stay on top of it because, yeah, you, like you said, you'll never know. You might figure out the day before. And, you know, most injuries are going to be nagging and they're going to be like, oh, he's questionable. Oh, he's out or he's in. And then the coronavirus is like, oh, he tested positive. He's out tomorrow. And it's like, okay, well, back to the waiver wire.
Benches are going to be more valuable than ever.
Very much so. So now we're going to get away from the NFL for the first time in the show. And we're going to go to some more semi-breaking news. This happened yesterday. This is in the college basketball world, specifically on our Gonzaga Bulldogs. Filip Petrushev decided to – you got to get that Serbian little S in there – decided to leave the Zags, and he is headed back to his hometown team, Mega B-Max in Serbia, specifically Belgrade, where he is from. He – decided this last second. So I guess according to the sources that I saw on Twitter who had sources, this was very surprising. The staff figured he was coming back. That's why they didn't press for the transfer that went to BYU, which I'm spacing on his name. And he was expected to be a very big vocal point to this team, but he was not going to make it in the NBA this year. He wasn't going to get drafted. I think he was 70th on their big board on ESPN. He was going to be integral to this team, and he decided to kind of at the last second, like, nope, I'm going to go play in the NBA. And he said, quote, there's a lot of uncertainty with the NCAA season. Here I should be able to showcase some skills I wasn't able to at Gonzaga and improve my draft stock. Two things stick out to me here. I think that's probably true. The NCAA season does have some uncertainty around it. Will it get played? I think yes. Will it get played on time? That's up in the air to me. But the other part that actually kind of seems like a little bit of a shot to me, being both a Zag fan and a reporter of the Zags, he said, I will be able to showcase some skills I wasn't able to at Gonzaga. And that makes me think, first off, he's a guy who consistently throughout his GU career, happened a lot last year when he was playing really well. If he didn't get the ball or if things didn't go the way he wanted, you saw him visibly complain. And you don't see that too often out of GU players. I mean, Mark Few had to actually pull him aside a couple times and be like, stop. Like, you know, this is
so bizarre. So out of character, seeing that on a Gonzaga team.
It was very weird. And so to me, that almost sounds like he was ready to go no matter what. Was that going to be the NBA? Was that going to be Serbia? You know, because he wasn't able to showcase his skills. And this is a guy who averaged almost 18 points a game, 8 rebounds, 9 double-doubles, and was probably going to be a preseason All-American for college. And he was All-WCC. I think he was Player of the Year, actually, yeah. And it's just super surprising to me because GU gave him his career. GU took him from the Monteverde Academy and turned him into kind of a stud. He averaged barely 6 points a game and almost not even 3 rebounds his freshman year. Granted, it was in limited minutes, but he looked like garbage. And heck, he's weak. And I'm going to, you know, be frank about it because he gets bodied in the post. His defense is soft. He's soft in general. And he thinks that's going to hold up. You know, he's lucky that international basketball is softer than the NBA because he would get eaten alive in the NBA right now, like a lot of GU bigs have problems with acclimating to the NBA. They're just a little soft. But, you know, whatever. I think go have fun in Serbia. Go have fun at home. You know, go live with your mom and dad.
I love the salt.
It's just like, you know, GU is such a unique place for a lot of players, and it just almost feels like he's not one of those guys who's going to be a Zag for life, you know, because you see a lot. Robert Sacre, we've talked about on the show, Adam Morrison, who now does the radio broadcast, Dan Dickow, Matt Santangelo. Nigel Williams-Goss, if we want to go recent, there's a long line of former Zags who, you know, the first thing when they are asked about their basketball careers, they talk about GU first. They don't talk about anything else. And I think Petrushev is going to be a guy who GU fans are not going to be – he's not going to be at the top of their list in terms of former Zags, in my opinion. So it is what it is. He does technically have until December or October 6th to withdraw his name. So I guess he's actually staying on the NBA draft board, which would be kind of interesting if he gets drafted to see what he does.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of funky. So that, I don't know. It's just, it's annoying. It's weird. I think the, like I said, the GU staff was surprised by it. And that also makes me feel like, I don't know. It's just a, it's kind of a, it's a Bush League thing to do. Like, I get there's uncertainty, but you should be able to have communication with your staff, with the staff that built you into the player who you are today. So that's my thoughts.
Well, it doesn't sound like he's the most cooperative individual, so I guess that would not be super out of his character to do what he did.
Yeah, and now they're going to lean on Drew Timmy, who was a stud freshman, a healthy Anton Watson, a GU prep basketball player, and then two international guys, both Pavel Zakharov, who played a few minutes last season, and then Omar Ballo. Mm-hmm. Bio Ballo. We'll figure it out when the season starts. It's definitely Ballo. Omar. and that I do know, whose nickname is Baby Shaq. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch. If anything, it gets him more minutes, and it's going to be a very, not a small GU team, but smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be fun. We'll see what happens. I'm just finished with him. We're going to move on the adult league of basketball, to the NBA, and their bubble.
Yeah. So speaking of adults, Dwight Howard.
He's a fun guy.
Yeah.
Historically, he's been a fun guy.
No, in terms of the NBA bubble, though, so the media members have been down there for like 2+ weeks. I think most of the players have been there.
Not Woj,
just
though.
About two. Oh, my God. Yeah, I haven't heard any updates about Woj either. From Woj. So we'll be sure to update you as soon as we find out anything about Woj. But the NBA bubble is going well. They had zero positive tests since the last time that everybody was tested, or was it just the players, on July 13th. It's going well. It sounds like all the reports are that people, the players, the media members, coaches, trainers, everybody that's down there is enjoying it. And it'll be interesting to see that, especially the teams that end up making the conference semis and then the conference finals and then the finals, if this new novel feeling of fun and being around and camaraderie and being able to be around people again for a lot of these players first time in months, if that follows through or if that starts to taper off as the weeks go by and they start playing and practicing all the time, because they're going to be playing a lot of basketball games in a very condensed period of time, especially in comparison to what they're usually accustomed to. But all reports are that it's going really well down there. Again, no positive tests, so the bubble is working. And we are now just about a week away from the first night of games on July 30th. So knock on wood that everything continues to go as smoothly as it has. But it's really reassuring, and it's awesome because the NBA has got it figured out. They were proactive, not reactive like the NFL, and they didn't even have the luxury of time on their hands, and they were able to devise a plan that has so far worked. And I, for all it's worth, it seems like it's going to continue to do so, and I hope that I'm not wrong on that. But, yeah, it has really been a showcase of how strong the NBA is under Commissioner Adam Silver, and then you look at the MLB and the mess that was the negotiation all summer long, basically, when they could have really had the spotlight and owned the month of June. And then you look at the NFL, who, like I said, had all this time on their hands and they did not do anything with it.
Yum.
And they just now today decided some of the testing rules and just decided about their preseason. So good for the NBA.
When we're
keep
literally
it up.
Like 2 weeks away from the start of preseason games, and they just now decided on that. So
exactly. So the NBA is really standing out amongst its peers, and it's evident why.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I think the NBA has done a solid job with trying to figure out the best plan of action. You know, I think, and let's not forget either about the MLS, who did have some problems at the beginning, but they're in the exact same bubble. They're down there in Orlando.
True.
They did have some issues at the beginning of their testing. To be fair, it wasn't when the bubble was fully set. I think their next round of testing should come out here pretty quick, but as far as I understand, the MLS bubble is doing pretty well as well. So that's the really interesting part is baseball and the NFL both. I think what made that the most complicating was they're not playing in one central location. One unfortunate thing, just to kind of be on a different little vein, that came out yesterday was that that Canada, the government, said, no, sorry, Toronto Blue Jays, you can't play in the Rogers Centre. So
gonna play in Buffalo.
Yeah, the poor Blue Jays are probably going to have their home stadium in the United States, probably in Buffalo.
Bills Mafia, baby.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's really interesting. I think this whole COVID issue of bubbles, no bubble, re-altering the contracts between the union contracts between the players' associations and the leagues has just been a total mess. And it's nice that it is coming quick, and coming so quick that the Mariners actually, they play baseball this week. They play baseball this Friday night, 6:10 first pitch, Root Sports here in Spokane. I think they'll probably be on 920. Maybe 590, maybe 700. I don't know. They changed all the time. But they are playing the Houston Astros, the cheaters. And one actually really interesting article that I saw this week is the Astros aren't going to get booed. They're not going to have to worry about just being ripped to shreds at every single stadium they go to. And it's really unfortunate.
Well, people are going to be able to hear a lot better the banging of the trash cans, should there be any of that.
That's a solid point. Yeah, I think the echoing of the trash cans will be very evident this time. I don't think it's going to take an internet sleuth to have to adjust the sound levels to figure out exactly what's going on. So that is a big plus. So not that they need it against the Mariners, though. So I think they'll be okay. But we do have baseball, and that's awesome.
Did you want to touch on the good news that broke this week for the Mariners? And by good, I mean, of course, not.
Not good. So you mean the actual break?
Yes.
Yes. Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure.
Let's go with that.
We're needing to be on the same page here.
Right.
But yes, it's always awesome when you're having a great week and you're excited for the Mariners to come back in a week, and all of a sudden you get this awesome notification from both ESPN and the MLB at-bat app, and it's like, Mariners prospect Julio Rodriguez fractures his wrist. And it's like, sweet, our 19-year-old number 2 overall prospect in our organization breaks his wrist. I love being a Mariners fan. It's so much fun. They love to just rip my heart out at every single chance that they get. And they did it again. Luckily, 4 to 6 weeks, he'll be back. It's just a hairline fracture. There's no surgery required. He's young. He's vibrant. He's athletic. He's gonna be just fine for sure.
Hey,
not a doubt in my mind.
Let's give credit to ESPN's app though for competently breaking that news.
Thanks
to you
for bringing that, because yes, ESPN did come through for the Sounders game Sunday night. Sounders played. ESPN worked great. I take credit for that.
I take credit
for their notification coming through cleanly about Julio Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
It's all on us. The locker room saved ESPN for now. Because don't I will let the audience know if they ever screw me again. Because that severely frustrated me. I had to get up before 6 a.m. to watch a soccer game, and then I fell asleep.
Did you want to go over the entire scenario again?
No,
Okay, cool.
It's just very frustrating. It's very frustrating to me. So, yes, thank you, ESPN. You get a gold star this week.
Woo!
For once. So,
worldwide leader.
Back now on to our official, consistent segment, closing time, which I don't think we have a jingle for yet. We tried to get one.
It's in the works.
It's in the works? Okay.
I don't know. I peaced out before you guys did.
I sang the word, the verse closing time, and we're going to mix it because it's not
there
great.
Are some kinks we've
got
to get worked
major
out.
Major kinks there. So
right.
It will come. Don't worry about that. But until then, here's closing time.
Here we are.
And we'll let Andrew go first. I think that's how we'll do it too, because I'm just interested to hear what you have
okay,
to say.
Okay, I have a two-part one. One
okay,
is kind of an extension of NBA bubble
yep.
thing. So a lot of the players were disappointed with the NBA and the list of terms that they could sport on the back of their jerseys in support for Black Lives Matter and social justice and police reform and all that. So Russell Westbrook has his own clothing line, and so the NBA Players Association has teamed up with Russell Westbrook's clothing line to make some warm-up gear that has a lot bigger array of words, terms, phrases. So I think that's kind of cool that they were able to do that to satisfy the players so that they have a little bit more freedom and liberty have a larger pool of things that, you know, might really resonate with them. So that was a cool thing.
Yes.
What's not cool is people on the internet. Imagine that. Crazy.
Surprising.
Okay, so I saw a New York Post article, headline more so. Zac Efron has a new show out.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so he has put on a little weight, and it's not bad weight. It's not unhealthy weight. However, his midsection isn't as insanely chiseled as it has been in past performances.
Shoot.
A la Baywatch.
Yeah.
So they officially said that he had a dad bod.
This was also said
a couple months ago about Jason Momoa when he was throwing axes at targets, like the man that he is, who had a little bit more weight in his midsection as well. These are the same people that think that Ja Morant and Rajon Rondo put on weight, put on muscle during the quarantine. The lack of understanding of what a human or an athlete's body is or is not is ridiculous. And what really goes hand in hand with these posts with the eyeballs and the fire emojis, because Rajon Rondo is wearing a tank top in practice and they're like, whoa, he's putting in work.
He's so big. Whoa.
Actually, no, he's always looked like that. He's always had that body. But thanks for noticing now. These are the same people that get super hyped about videos of Antonio Brown not even being covered by a cornerback, doing a route,
running a route, then
catching the ball. And they're like, oh, he's going to be a problem this year. Fire emoji, fire emoji. It's like, he's an NFL player. He's going to catch the ball. Why is this?
He's a top NFL player.
Why is this such a profound display of athleticism to you? I mean, you shouldn't. And even when they do have cornerbacks covering them, without safety coverage over the top, any professional wide receiver should be able to beat a corner. Yep. They're on the same page with the quarterback. They know exactly what's going to happen. The defensive back can only react. Of course, they're going to get beat. And you see all the from Bleacher Report and all these various media entities.
ESPN.
And they put and they put out these stupid, stupid taglines and the emojis that really just make it, you know, the flex and the eyeball and the lightning bolts and the eyes and everything. And it's just like, you understand the professional athletes, and you understand that this is not impressive by any means.
Yeah.
And that this is not a harbinger for what's to come. They are literally just doing what athletes of their caliber do.
And the craziest part, too, is that these athletes that are looking like this, there's people in the world who aren't athletes that look like that. Like,
yeah.
There's more. There's more than just athletes that look like this.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be like, oh, my, did you see that guy?
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, actually, a couple things. First off, he's paid to look like that. Second, he doesn't look that special.
No.
Third, Rajon Rondo still broke his finger. So even if he did look really good, was that what happened? Did he break his thumb? Yeah, so like, it's like, I'm right with you because that is the most annoying thing in the world.
It's just, it's obnoxious, and you need to get more creative, a little bit more clever, and actually have a semblance of you knowing what you're looking at.
Well, do you know what it is, I think, is they're pulling in these, especially in the media world, I think they're pulling in these interns.
That's exactly what it is.
These people who are between 20 and like 23, maybe 25, and they're like, oh my God, emojis, emojis. I love emojis. And it's like, first off, and actually, I don't know how big of sports fans they are, because I watch these videos, like you said, and I'm like, that's not that impressive. Like, that's not that cool.
It's not.
And like, they'll show things like a guy catching a frisbee. And it's like, yeah, it's cool. He jumped high to get it. But like, again, it's not that special.
Or my favorite is people taking practice videos of Ben Simmons. And we saw this, oh my God, during the season and before the season, dating back to last summer. And we've seen it now that the Sixers have returned to the bubble and the practice court, making threes. Oh my God, who cares? Until
you can
we
do
see
it
consistently in a game, I don't care. Don't give me the eyes being like, oh, Ben Simmons incorporating that three into his game. It's like, It drives me crazy. It really does. So that is my closing time. Let's close down these media entities and their internships and
all aboard
their tweets, because it's just nonsense.
Just don't be dumb. Don't be annoying. It's really not that tough. And the craziest part is, I know there's multiple eyeballs that are looking at this tweet or at this post before it goes out, and they're all like, that's awesome. That's the coolest tweet I've ever seen.
Green light.
Yeah. Let's do it. My closing time, not so much of a rant, because yours was awesome. I was here for long for the ride, and I'm all for it. I'll end this one on a little bit quieter note, but I think just as interesting.
Probably not.
It's all right. So we're 3 weeks removed from the Nathan's hot dog eating contest that has happened for like long time, and a new study just came out about it. And I love it. I just saw this probably 10 minutes before the show started, and I was all on board. Somebody, and I'm so happy that they did this, studied the possible amounts of hot dogs that you could a human could possibly eat. Mm. And they compared it to what Joey Chestnut has done, because essentially over the past 20 years, the record for most hot dogs being eaten has been broken 11 times by Kazutoyo Arai. And then obviously the other one is Kobayashi. That's a very famous one. And then Joey Chestnut has just been an absolute stud. That's why he has a nickname Jaws. He ate this year 75. Yes, 75 hot dogs, which first off, let's just give credit to that, because that is –
it's nauseating
to
watch.
10 minutes, by the way. 10 minutes. Yeah. He's eating 7.5 hot dogs a minute. That's
you know they go out and party after that, too. I hear that Joey, after that day, after the 4th of July, he goes out with his buddies and his family, and he drinks. And he gets faded after shoving 75 hot dogs, glizzies, down his throat.
Down his just big... Okay, so yeah, each
Vinny's
hot dog
salivating as we
each,
speak.
Yeah, our producer's just like, I love hot dogs. I could do that. And he maybe could. We should act hot dog eating contest. We'll do it at some point.
Big hot dog maybe. Sandwich guy.
So each hot dog too weighs 1.6 ounces, and so that's what 70. It's probably 85 ounces ish of hot dogs. So this study decided to look at what is the most hot dogs a human could possibly biologically physically eat. And this study was done by High Point University Professor Dr. James M. Smoliga, based on analysis of 39 years of Nathan's contest data, and he pegs that the theoretical human cap of possible hot dogs to be eaten is 83. And that's 8 away from Joey Chestnut's record. And again, we extrapolate that out. That's now over 8 hot dogs a minute. Which is just disgusting.
So does this then take Joey Chestnut out of the running for greatest athlete of all time? The fact that he hasn't optimized his
if anything, hot dog eating potential. If anything, I think this makes him the greatest athlete of all time, because he is that close to eating the most, I mean, the biologically the cap of how much a human can consume. So, and they actually said that the theoretical human cap on tubular meat, which I thought was an interesting way to explain that. So essentially, it says that the paper, which models the maximal active consumption rate and its plasticity in humans, perspectives from hot dog eating competitions, whatever that says, essentially, the maximum rate of consumption for humans is 832 grams per minute. That's higher than a grizzly bear, which is mind-boggling, but that's lower than a gray wolf. So essentially, that goes down to that 83 hot dogs in the 10-minute. And it's – I think it's – so he's a professor in biomechanics and physiology, which I think is pretty decent in terms of his credentials for this. So I'm just visualizing that mass that's just sitting there, that's hot dogs and bread just hanging out, and he's 8 away from the cap. And I think – I'm going to say this. I think Joey Chestnut is top 5 athlete of all time. I'll probably tweet that. I'm going to tweet that right now.
Yeah, put a NASCAR driver up in the top 5
NASCAR's
while you're at it.
NASCAR's top 5. I think LeBron's top 5. I think there has to be an NFL player in there somewhere, maybe like Bernie Sanders. That doesn't make sense. Joey Chestnut top 5 for me. How many hot dogs do you think you could eat in 10 minutes? If you had to guess, I mean, because I can think about how many I could eat in like a minute, but then can I do that over a 10-minute frame? Not a chance.
In 10 minutes, I think I could do 4. I'd be 4? Pretty miserable. Is that a lot?
That's a little. Really? That's 4? Like just like a tiny basic Frank?
I don't know. I feel like beef ones are pretty rich, man. I get full off of like one of those, man.
All right, so we have determined that Andrew with turkey, is like at chicken. The bottom of the top athletes of all time.
Yes.
That's unfortunate. I think I could eat in the first minute. I think I could put away like 3 hot dogs, and then after that, I'd be like, I'm too full to continue eating. That's it for the 10 minutes. I can do 3.
I don't like how much I'm thinking about it now.
It's making you a little sick.
I guess I could do more than 4, but that's like if I actually want to be miserable after that 10-minute period.
You're gonna get money for this. Mm. We'll give you some money. Would that push you toward more than 4?
We can negotiate, but yeah, I'd be a little bit more incentivized, I suppose.
to just shove hot dogs down your throat.
Yep.
Nice. Yes. All right. So
Michael Bennett.
Yeah, exactly. So After all that hot dog talk, it is almost dinner time, so I don't think I'm going to have hot dogs, though, because that does not sound good at the moment. We have more live sports happening this week with Mariners coming back on Friday night. Like I said, Sounders will be playing. They made the final 16 of the World Cup-style tournament that they have going on right now. NBA's back next week-ish, and it's a good time to be a sports fan again, sort of, hopefully, maybe.
So far,
this world's crazy, and we are here to try and provide some sort of balance, even though we also have no idea what's going on, and we're just spewing things for people to hear.
Hence hot dog talk.
Hence hot dog, Joey Chestnut, Jaws, from High Point University in North Carolina, Professor Dr. James Smoliga. Thank you for stopping by this show. We will see you again next week with hopefully the Mariners sitting at 5-0.
Is there any other way this season would start for the Mariners?
No. They're gonna start 5-0, and then they'll finish with 20 wins. We're all going to say playoffs are bust after 5-0. Then they're going to just, again, like I said, rip our hearts out and feed it to us. So appreciate you again for listening to the only consistently running sports talk show in the Spokane area. We will see you next week.
Thanks for watching The Locker Room on Spokane Talks. Check us out on Facebook as well as our other platforms. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by emailing us at info@SpokaneTalksOnline.com. And for more sports news, opinions, and content, follow Justin and me on Twitter.